After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse, dear listener. It's been a while, and I'm glad to be back, because we're going to try something new today. By the title, you can guess this episode is going to be a roundabout discussion about identity politics, but I'm of the mind that for topics like these, we've been taking in discourse and discourse about the discourse for a very long time, and the longer we've been exposed to this kind of enclosed discussion, the more we've been affected by it in a way we wouldn't have reference for unless you could take a look from the outside in, where you could see us in a kind of enclosed, warm environment, being gaslit in a greenhouse, if you will. If you've engaged with Slavoj Zizek's work, this may sound familiar to you.
I'm giving you a choice. Either put on these glasses or start eating that trash can.
I already am eating from the trash can all the time. The name of this trash can is ideology. The material force of ideology makes me not see what I'm effectively eating. It's not only our reality which enslaves us. The tragedy of our predicament when we are within ideology is that when we think that we escape it into our dreams, at that point, we are within ideology.
So for today's discussion, we're going to discuss piss. By this, I mean power, identity, and social structures. Namely, on how identity can and is used in discussion, how does it connect to wielding power, and how do those actually reflect social structures in the modern world? But beyond this, I want to get a feel for how we were exposed to these concepts, who we've seen utilize them and how, and what impact it's had when it comes to understanding society and culture. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome today's guest, making their third appearance on this podcast. Please welcome my partner, my love, Sky.
Yay! Woo! Hello.
So yeah, I gotta find a way to get you that challenge coin at some point. I don't have a service to make like trophies and shit.
Yeah, I need some kind of pen or a T-shirt or that says I was the 3-time guest on Greenhouse Gaslighting.
I need to at least do, like, you know, they would print off like those certificates on like construction paper in school.
Oh yeah.
I need to at least start doing that. Let's get right into it. Identity politics. When you hear the term, what comes to mind? And when was the first time you heard it called as such?
I have to say the first time was probably on Twitter. But when I think of identity politics, I don't know, because I truly don't know. I have negative connotations. I don't go into like what it actually means to have identities, like your identities to be politicized or for your identities to be like, dude, I don't know. It's been so warped where I don't even know where anything means anymore.
That's fair. I guess I'll do the traditional mansplaining thing I do, where I just go off on my experience and fundamentally discount your sense of alienation. So if I can really recall like my first exposure to the field, it probably was at least the earlier 2010s. I think that's when everyone really was getting exposed to Tumblr. And it was that weird mix of like you'd go in on Tumblr for a fandom or something, and the person would also tweet, hey, don't be mean to gay people or whatever. And then like next thing you know, you're reading infographics and like Tumblr dissertations about sociology. And you're like, oh, wow, I'm learning so much on the internet. But it's not really equivalent to the academic setting, nor is it even close to learning about how this interplays in real life, right? Mm-hmm. So I think really, and I've gone over this story before, but in my kind of coming to terms as a liberal, I think I really sank deep into that idea that Democrats were the party that focused on social justice, and then learning about social justice through Tumblr, bad medium to engage the age at the time. But I think that's when I heard identity politics expressed as it is. And then just going to university and being involved in different student groups and with the, I'll just call it the diversity office that we both worked at. I think that's where I was fully, not indoctrinated, no. It was more like, that's where I was fully, it was fully explained to us, like, these kind of paradigms for understanding sociology, understanding race dynamics, understanding, at least in the liberal conception, oppression and tensions among groups in American society. And it still took me a while to learn that it was devoid of a class character. There are some liberals who talk about class, but it's never to the extent that I've seen socialists and leftists talk about it.
Yeah.
So actually, that's a good follow-up for me then. Like, when did you get exposed to a class critique?
My entire life. Like, in what sense of a critique do you mean?
Well, you can speak to your lived experiences, but also, like, not only just when you were exposed to the concept, like, in an academic sense, but I guess what did it take for you to realize, like, okay, there's more to understanding this than just identity. It's more than skin deep. It's more than just gender dynamics. There's the actual stratification of power and wealth that's affecting this too.
I guess in my lived experiences, I saw this like very early on, because Saginaw is very Black, very, very like high, like a lot of Black people, Blacks, and Mexican people. But when I was going to church, and I went to church on the same side of the river as me, and it's very segregated in Saginaw, if you don't know. But like, there was some people who were in there who were very like, just what you would say is uppity, and like they were holier than thou and all of this other bullshit. And I'm like, we're both Black. We're both from Saginaw. You go to the same school as me. It's like, it's not like you have this complete other life and everything. Like, we're from the same background. So like, that's when I start kind of understanding more about class dynamics, because I always knew that we were poor. But then coming and living in Oakland County, the biggest culture shock, it was just that like, oh, I'm poor, and the people that I looked up and thought that they were like so rich, they were poor, and these people are very upper middle class. And just, it really hit me. I did not understand what is considered to be a different type of class. Like, I thought we were, always knew we were poor, but I thought we were poor, and then other people were in the middle class, and then everybody else was super rich. But there is no middle class. So it's either like you are in the upper middle class, or you are poor, or you are obliviously rich. Like, there's no, and I think definitely living and being more on Tumblr during those times too, that kind of warped this, me trying to understand my identity, or my identity and what identity politics are. But I will say that it was Tumblr. It wasn't Twitter. It was Tumblr that really got me into understanding this. And
yeah, and it was a very strange time too, because I guess a lot of us were adolescents when we first got exposed. At least I know I was. And it was a very interesting mix of like the most individualistic, narcissistic kind of posting. But also a lot of it was about self-discovery, about queer identity, about understanding, maybe being a misfit. But also it was just a lot of like online, especially teenage drama that I think was fascinating for a lot of people to take in. And I think those are some of the habits that are going to die hard for a segment of people who I am kind of skeptical of when we talk about how we discuss identity in America. And I don't know if you agree with me on this, but we can talk about that. Is there is a segment of people, I'm not really interested in saying who's the left and who isn't, but I think they generally tend to hold more liberal politics. They would self-identify as people who are in favor of a more egalitarian society, are more in favor of undoing a level of structural damage. But if you try to talk to them, or if you if they try to explain their conception for things, they are fully enthralled by talking solely about characteristics of race, of gender, of disability, of sexual identity, more so than they are interested in discussing means of power, how classes are stratified, and how power has been used to serve class interests, or even to do some of the structural damage that they see as fault or as bad.
I definitely agree. I think people, especially like people see like the Beyoncés and the Rihannas, and they're like, look, black people are like, can be rich, so things are okay. Like, I've seen black middle class people. I've had that one black person in my school at like Orion or whatever bullshit like thing, and they think that things aren't bad because there could be one or two black people who could possibly get into that, or other people of color into the class system. And then they think, look, they did something, so obviously it's possible. And don't think about the fact that it's only one or two of these people of color that you're seeing. So it's obviously not accessible to all, and you don't know their specific background. But yeah, it's easier to just pretend like class isn't there, because no matter what your like religion is, or your race, or your gender identity, you can see all of that in different class backgrounds. So you don't feel like it's completely and utterly alienating to be in the middle class, because there could be other people of different backgrounds be in the middle class, and it makes you feel better. Like, it makes you feel like, oh, the middle class isn't bad, or like trying to be in the middle class isn't bad, upper middle class I should say, or trying to be a part of these ideologies aren't bad, because there are other people who are different, diverse, they're in there. But the fact that you will only see a few, that those people don't have a understanding or a concept of class, and how people just don't care about like poor people at all. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous. You call people who were called essential workers literally a year ago now, from now, are now again burger flippers and in unskilled jobs and all this other stuff. Like, after a whole year of being like, these are the important people of our society, they're unsung heroes, they're our frontline workers and everything, it has gone back to like, fuck you guys, you dumbasses. Like, take your $50 for your application, take your $100 sign-in bonus and deal with the same abuse that you dealt with pre-pandemic with the added little spice of the fact that it's still a pandemic. There's no want to help poor people. And if there is, it's usually in this type of like, hi, everyone. Look, I'm good. I helped a poor today. Yay, me.
So let's. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this best. I think this has really been magnified kind of in the wake of last year's big summer of BLM protests, because it's not to say that there weren't massive acts of protest from BLM prior to this, but they kind of just seem to fall on deaf ears. But now, I think with Trump and the kind of liberal hysteria around Trump, there was a big, I just feel like it was a performative push, but at the same time, there was what seemed to be like a at least semi-genuine desire on the part of white people to show up. But me and you went to one of these protests, so I guess we can speak to our experience. I don't think there's a conception for how to help when you're in that comfortable middle strata. So I think a lot of times, you know, we can talk about how especially more right-wing people during the pandemic have kind of been, you know, hey, I'm self-entitled. I'm going to show up and yell at the waitress at Applebee's and who cares if I'm wearing a mask. But there is a kind of liberal guilt where you still enjoy your life in the burbs. You still enjoy having all this ill-gotten bounty of American consumption, but you can't seem to turn a blind eye to the inequities in your society. So you do something to... I'm speaking to a very specific memory of this protest, but I think there was this one girl who just came up, like, because everyone decided to make some speeches before they went on the march. And this one girl just broke into tears, didn't even say anything. She got on stage, said two words, broke into tears, and that was her speech. And I think that speaks to more so to confusion, aside from just malign or malicious ignorance. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but I'm going to have to disagree with you, Chief.
That's fine. I feel like I'm butchering like what I'm trying to say right now.
No. I completely understand. Like, it's... These people aren't inherently bad people who are just trying to not pay attention. Like, they want to do something and they want to care, and they have that feeling of like people when they become more to the left, I will say, not liberal, more to the left, when they're like, oh shit, things need to be done. A lot of things need to be done, but I can't do anything. I feel powerless. But those people went from going to these protests, donating to mutual funds, all this other stuff, to just being like, purposeful silence. just truly not wanting to care. And like, it got too much for them. And they were just like, I'm tired of this white guilt and I'm going to just peace. And you... Obviously, it could be because of these burnouts that people are getting and all of this other stuff. But I think it's just so telling to these people who are just like, I see these injustices. I was there at the marches. And now I'm truly not going to say anything about the constant people who are constantly getting killed by the police, mm-hmm. because this wasn't just a 2020 hot police summer where they decided to just kill police officers. This is shit that happens every single day, every day. Like, there will probably be, out of the 365 or 366 days that happen in a year, probably less than 20 days a black person isn't killed by the police. Literally almost every day this shit happens. Almost every day. And for you to be silent about all of the other people and just care about George Floyd, and then just come back out and be like, yay, Derek Chauvin, I got, like, is gonna possibly get murdered in police, in the prisons, and be like, all of this, but then absolutely fucking silent about all of the people who don't get arrested, all of the people who do get killed, all of the bad things that fucking happen to people of color all the fucking time, and just are silent. And these are sometimes not just white people. These are also people of color who just feel like they don't want the burden to bear anymore, or they just, it doesn't happen to them or their people, or it doesn't happen to the people that they know of. So I choose to not see, like, meme. Like, there's nothing, hear no evil, see no evil, I will do evil though. Like, that's how they live.
Okay, side question. How do you think the discussion is going right now? Because I'm trying to hear everything in context. I feel like I'm a little confused on what I was trying to do with this episode. Like, I think I started with one topic in mind, and I think what it's turning into, which is, it's okay if it turns into this. I'm going to have to edit this and see what I like. It's turning more into why liberals can't process this. And I think,
I mean, it's good to call out liberals. They need to be called out, because it's so easy for people to call out conservatives, because you right. can actively see that their bullshit is, the things that they say and they believe is contradictory to the lives that they live and the things that they go through. But liberals will stand up and blatantly say out loud, this is what I stand for. And then when you try to put their money where their mouth is, they are absolutely silent. They will log off of social media and they will pretend like they didn't even see it. And that needs to be called out more. It doesn't, people pretend like liberals are good because they decide that they care about one or two social justice topics, when that does not make you a good person. That just means that you have two things that are, like, are good things, that are good topics, that are good values or ideas. But you can't just say that you're a liberal and just assume that you have good person points and you're going to the good place. Like, that is exactly how we continue to have this shitty sense of the world, where it kind of reminds me of, like, the concept of the fucking purge. Like, you do good all year round, and then you have one day to go around and, like, kill people and steal all you want and do all of this, and you are forgiven from your sins because the rest of the year you were good. Like, that's not how shit works. You have to actively be a good person all the time and want goodness for people and not be shitty to say that you're not a shitty person.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting to me is, like, what did we end up getting out of last year's wave of protests? All we got is, like, more merchandise with BLM branded on it. We got more, like, black people on ads. We got more, like, natural hair products at beauty stores. That's really all I saw as, like, a net result. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's really all I see that we got.
It's how to continue like having this capitalistic bullshit. It's just, are the companies that you thought that were liberal and cute, Are they going to stand up and say, yeah, we love your liberal, cute black ass? Or are they going to be like, okay, are you going to spin shit here or not? Because yeah, they know you'll still spin shit there.
No, and like, that's it, what it then seems. It's like the ritual of consumption of goods is never going anywhere. Mm-hmm. We're all going to the big box stores. We're all getting like Coke from the Coke Freestyle machine. That's never ending. But are you going to the America MAGA Patriot store, or are you going to the In This House We Believe Trans Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter store? Like, there seems to be no fundamental challenge to power, because all we're really seeing is this kind of ability for people to say unprovoked, yes, I believe racism is real. And then they don't really have much of an answer in response to that. Like, and I'm not, like, again, like, it's either you get like white guys in kente cloths talking about reparation, or you get you get people who just say stuff like voting for Bernie Sanders is racist, and you should be ashamed of yourself. You never get like a consistent answer for like, hey, we believe in racism. Like, you know, we believe that racism is a fundamental problem. Yes, we believe we need to be anti-racist, which, again, this is a new term they dropped on us. I don't fucking understand where and when it came from. Just like BIPOC, they dropped anti-racist. And I'm like, that's just being a good person, I guess. And you turned it into a terminology now. It's like, damn, I got to be anti-racist. I can't just be a decent person. I can't just be a non-racist. I have to be anti-racist. So this is new to me.
I am anti-racism.
Well, also like BIPOC. What, when, that's the other thing about this. Like, again, sorry, listener. I thought I was going to be more structured about this, but let's just get deep into this, right? Terms, what it seems to have turned into is it's become such a focus on behalf of well-meaning people to more so be focused on using correct terminology and avoiding microaggression than it is about being fundamentally opposed to systemic injustice and systems that perpetuate systemic injustice. Mm-hmm. So you get in trouble for not using BIPOC. You get in trouble for not using AAPI instead of like referring to specific ethnic groups. Because again, like, some of these terms are not clear, nor are they meant to be used in certain contexts. So like Latinx, if anyone is familiar with this, it was meant to be something people said online. It was only meant to be typed. Then people started saying it out loud, and now it's like, well, now you're transphobic if you don't use it. I'm pretty sure you're not.
I mean, I think in situations like that, it was created for a way to give an inclusion to more people. So for trans people or non-binary people who don't fit in with the Latino or Latina like version of it, can be considered Latinx.
No, and I agree. But when it comes down to political messaging, it devolves into, if you don't use the term, you are off, you should be off the books.
But that's the thing, is that is not even true. Because like, if you're like talking about like politics and political, you think fucking Joe Biden knows what Latinx is? Like, you think Joe Biden, the head of the Democratic Party, like, knows what non-binary is? Like,
no, I mean, I think that's fair. While all of us are having this discussion about whether or not you should use this term, or whether or not it's stupid to use this term, the people in power are just like, they're having their Saturnalia in front of us. They're enjoying them
in the background,
right?
They still are using, when they're writing the language for the actual bills, they're saying coloreds, and their fucking interns are going around racing it purposely and putting people of like, even in academia, like, no one is going to, like, there's no one here with a fucking water gun full of bleach ready to like, or full of fucking acid ready to blind you in the eyes if you like say the wrong academic lingo. And it was really just created, it was created by these people in the academic like places to just try to come up with more words and terms to help them describe certain people, not for people to just be like on Twitter being like, you Latinx, Latinos, Latinas, this is too much to deal with. Like, no one's saying, unless the individual person says like, call me this, you don't have to go up in arms about somebody wanting to be called this. You don't even fucking know. You guys are just wanting to get angry because you want to get angry.
Well, no, but that's correct. That a lot of these seem to be discussions that are had just to be had. Like, I'm not, again, for all the uproar I caused, I'm not that concerned about terminology at the end of the day. Now, whether or not someone wants to use BIPOC, whether or not someone wants to use AAPI, that's their business. I think it's trying to draw constituencies out of thin air where none exist, because you're trying to... It sounds to me, it seems like the Biden strategy, right? Where you're assuming this constituency who you're going to count on for support is already in the bag for you. So you're putting Black, Indigenous, and then as a catch-all, every other person of color in that term, right? That's fine. But the routes of exploitation and the systemic injustices faced by all the three in this equation have not been similar. So we can talk about how for Black people in America, oppression by race is more uniquely understood. When we talk about Indigenous people, we can talk about how historically their dispossession has been among the most tragic. And then for other people of color, that's still not specific enough.
Mm-hmm.
So in trying to create more inclusive language for a certain academic, yes, you're right. It probably has merit for that individual academic's work. But in a actual movement-based context, in an actual political-based context, in trying to understand and critique these methods of power that we're trying to fight against, I think we have devolved into screaming into the ether on social media about terminology more so than we have about the systemic oppression itself. That's what I'm getting at.
Oh yeah. Like I'm just like, we went from trying, and I feel like terms like BIPOC tries to be more specific without just using, like, I guess it is good that people use it if they're like, we all have a Twitter limit, but there's like, you can do threads now, you got 280, you can do way more now on Twitter, you don't have to put BIPOC, but
BIPOC, you could record a podcast,
right? BIPOC, it makes sense in the academic like structure when you're talking about Black, Indigenous, and people of color compared to like white students. And you know, majority of students who are in college and higher education are still white. So like, if you're doing that comparative, makes perfect sense. If you're doing like, if you're talking about anything else outside, you can be like, hey, Trump got some BIPOC voters. That's true. But did he get Black people, like, specifically? Did he get Indigenous people specifically? Did he get all of the people of color specifically? Or did he just really poll with Cuban Americans from Florida? That is completely different. You can say BIPOC, but you're not being specific enough. And by saying that, you're basically saying that it could be all of those people in that group instead of a specific person or a specific type of group. So it is so important to be as specific as you can, especially if you're actually having a fucking conversation because that's how you know exactly who you're talking about.
I agree 100%. And like, that's why I'm kind of, I guess I'm going to use the word skeptical of this kind of academic consensus around how we should talk about identity and social structures. Because at even the most well-intentioned or even the most accurate scholar, right, is still coming from the norms and I don't mean traditions, but like the setting of academia. The academic setting is not at it's all not like the same. Real world.
Yeah. And like the fact that there are people out there using these terms that not only didn't go to like to into academia, not saying that you can't use these terms, but they don't know the basis of what it's intersectionality all over again, where people use that word so fucking wrong, and they still do. Because you don't understand the basis of why it was created. It was created by a Black woman lawyer to talk about the specifics of dealing with racism as a Black woman and sexism as a woman. Like, all of this, how it intersects. And people took that, said they made a whole other definition and decided to use that without knowing even why it was made. And it's not that you can't use academic language, because that is creating an elitism of its own, but you need to know what the fuck you're talking about. You need to understand. And people also don't understand that all of this is theory. Theory is not 100% this is what it is. It is a theory. These are people's academic theories from their own like research and everything, which means it could be wrong or it could not actually be what can consist of everyone. Like, it's always so specific. It's like when people have PhDs, they don't know everything about everything. They know a lot of thing about this one topic.
Well, and that's what I'm going to step in. It's not that the theory may be wrong. It's that the theory is in abstract, no matter what. And I think that's the main problem. And I think this is what I was trying to get at by discussing Tumblr at the start, is that a lot of people, and especially now on Twitter, you see this because that's where everyone migrated to after Tumblr stopped showing nudes, right? Yeah. But
it's... No titties, get out the city.
Now you can just get mad at people for not saying BIPOC and look at titties on Twitter. But that
you get the best of both worlds.
Did you just make a Miley Cyrus reference on my podcast?
No, I made a Hannah Montana reference.
We will deal with this later.
They are different.
So. The thing is that whether it was Tumblr then or Twitter now, there's this contingent of people who just parrot either radical anarchist terms or academic language as if it can carry water in an informal setting. And it's like, look, do you talk particle physics to your friends in a casual setting?
Absolutely not.
So why would you talk critical race theory and stereotype threat with your friends?
Dude, I promise you, you don't want to read that shit. Most of this shit is so fucking boring. I had to read all of this critical race theory shit for my in my master's. It's stupid. It's stuff that you already know that someone truly got paid to research, and you're like, maybe if you talked to a person of color, you would have knew this beforehand. Okay, I guess not. But because you have to make it, you have to have this backed up research and everything, then they can be like, people go through racism. Damn, now we know that for sure because Harvard told us. Oh, crazy.
And that's the tricky part, right? Because when we get so deep into the academic analysis of identity dynamics, right? It just tends to focus on the microaggression side more so than it does on the broader justice-oriented goals that I think need to make up goals of the left. Things like restorative justice, things mm-hmm. like ending colonialism, things mm-hmm. like ending wealth inequity. Like, those are the real, like, systemic goals that need to be achieved economically and because of how fucked up global history is, have impacted different communities in different ways. But when you get into the weeds of mastering this academic language, you kind of just create these bizarre narratives of personal suffering through which you can then do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Let's review the CIA ad, the woke CIA ad, if you want.
Yes. Are you gonna play it?
I'm gonna play it. Where we can react.
Oh my god! Yes.
All right.
Truly, this is like one of the best things that happened to me this month.
When I was 17, I quoted Zora Neale Hurston's "How It Feels to Be Colored Me" in my college application.
I need you to pause it. I need you to pause it already. There's no way in motherfucking hell, no way in fucking motherfucking hell that this girl read Zora Neale Hurston and then was like, you know what? This makes me want to be a CIA agent. This the woman who made like wrote all of her books in like Southern accents and everything. It, like, there's no way. First of all, there's no way that you read this as a like at 16. Did she say she's a fucking liar? It's a fucking lie. That's all I have to say so far.
Well, I know we all hate the term virtue signaling, right? But when you say I read Zora Neale Hurston and I quoted it, I'm like, who is this for? Aside from your like grade 12 AP English teacher, who else is it for?
Oh my god, I know her AP teacher is like, oh my god. I made her read. No, because they wouldn't even read that in fucking AP. There's no way that this girl.
Oh my god. Okay, so
read Zora Neale Hurston. There's no way that her school would have taught her that. It's no way she would have went out of her way to like try to read her. If you're a person who wants to be in the CIA, there. Who taught you this? Who made you read this? There's
I think absolutely I figured it out.
Pulled this quote and just was like, here.
So here's where I'm at, because you just opened my mind, and I think I need to be more caffeinated when I record now. Holy fuck.
Yes.
A lot of these people who we're all arguing with, like if you're on the quote-unquote left and you're mad at this kind of person I'm talking about on the show, we're talking to people who are still writing their college admission essay. Like, that's what this is.
Who are you writing this for?
Who is all of this for? What is using all this terminology for? What is like staying hip to it? It is, you are to this day still trying to impress your college admissions advisor. You have never met them. You don't even remember what your essay was about.
Like, what award do you think you're trying to earn? But Wokest CIA agent 2021. Like most maybe, woke person to cause a coup. Like there's like, I don't know what this is trying to do.
Okay, so you know how like I'm still trying to read my history on this, but in America, the left really shifted from labor to academia. Especially in the wake of the student movement, because I mean, again, labor was getting crushed. And in the wake of the Cold War and anti-communism, labor just wasn't having the pull, and we were getting really shut down. But I think this is the net result of sinking into the academy, is we're all fucking writing college admissions essays now. The whole reason we don't have a conception for labor, the whole reason we don't have a holy fuck, it makes sense now, because we're trying to get into college instead of like understanding the world we live in.
Oh my god.
Well, hey listener, I'm sorry this is not the episode you expected, but I just had my mind opened.
It's the episode you're getting.
You know what? I had my vacation. I'm gonna upload whatever we want. Okay, you want a good show? Go to Chapo. I love them. They're well produced. Go to Bad Faith. They're well produced. Us, we're gonna fuck around. We're gonna continue to fuck around. You get what you get.
And you're gonna find out.
All right, back to the episode. Well, not the episode, the ad.
Stated simply, I am not tragically colored. There is no sorrow dammed up in my soul, nor lurking behind my eyes. I do not mind at all.
Where'd you quote
this, bitch? At 17, I had no idea what life would bring, but Sora's sentiment...
Why is she wearing the shirt that says Miha on it?
I felt as a daughter of immigrants then and now. Nothing about me was or is...
She wearing the chola earrings. What is this for?
She said, look, CIA agents could wear...
complex legal issues in English... while also belting Guayaquil de mis amores in Spanish.
Who is this for?
I can change a diaper with one hand and console a crying toddler with the other.
And then kill their parents.
Mom posting. Peak mommy posting.
I'm a cisgender millennial who's been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. I am intersectional.
Oh my god, she's my girl boss.
Not a box checking exercise.
You are literally...
Look at all these white CIA chiefs who have, like, destabilized so many governments, done all this harm.
The reason she got this fucking job is because she, like, checked all of these boxes.
Or slipped through the cracks.
The Diversity Inclusion Award.
Oh
my god, she did get the woke award from the CIA.
Sometimes I struggle. I struggle feeling like I could do more, be more to my two sons.
Whose pictures?
And I struggle
who's
leaving
like,
the office when I feel
like,
there's so much more to do.
Arts of all of the kids that she kills?
Syndrome, but at 36,
well, okay,
I
so you know how...
misguided patriarchal ideas of what
this
a woman
is the reason why the world...
Hey, she's wearing a mask. She's wearing a mask.
Like I wear a mask.
Miha, you are worth it. She got the feminist fist on it. God.
Miha, you are worth this coup. Yes, queen.
My parents left everything they knew and loved to expose me to opportunities.
And then this is what you became. Some straight up Kamala type shit. Disappointment.
First generation Latina and officer at CIA.
Ooh, she's a first generation CIA agent.
Unapologetically you, whoever you are. Know your worth.
If I was unapologetically me, she would shoot me in the streets. Fucking in the streets.
The CIA logo coming in through black. Oh my god, that's frightening. That's frightening.
CIA.gov/careers. Man, I want to be the person. Let me be like the copy editor. And I'm like, yes, please write what you feel like is your woke CIA experience. And I want to be the person, like, erasing frivolously, like,
well you know what
I
it
wanted
is.
To kill people and change it with, my parents would be proud of me. Like,
but you know what it is? It's like they want to make this whole thing that, like, hey, socialism isn't woke, guys. Socialism is actually being a bro. It's doing
you
bro
know
stuff.
Woke?
It's like, you know
Killing.
What's woke? Destabilizing Cuba, making sure they have decades of sanctions.
Mm.
Making sure that the indigenous leader of Bolivia is kicked out in a coup by right wingers and has to flee to Mexico. That's being a real social justice warrior.
That is girl power. She is a girl boss. She is a cisgender queen. Also, like, you added cisgender, but you didn't tell us if she was like straight or not. Like, why'd you have
she
to
had
tell
the,
us
she had the
she
had the
cis.
Jesus, she had the cross, so I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah, so she's had, well, no, she's Latina, so she's like obviously has to be Christian. She didn't want to talk about her faith or anything else. Just the fact that she's cis and she's got anxiety. Like, bitch, you are not.
Why would you have anxiety? You can make people disappear. You can write people away from existence. Like, why are you afraid?
Like, you have an awkward interaction at the restaurant where they say, enjoy your meal, and you say, you too, and you just are like, oh, I have so much anxiety, now I have to get them killed. Like, like, what the fuck? I truly don't understand.
No, they probably have that, like, gun from Men in Black where, like, they shoot it at people and they forget what they saw in the last hour. Oh, like, why would you have anxiety knowing you have that level of power?
I have so much anxiety being the wokest CIA agent, 2019.
And just no self-awareness for, like, the destabilizing effects that the CIA has had in other countries. Two people of color, two indigenous people.
She's like, I am bilingual, and it's like they literally want you to go in, become a spy on these Latinx countries and then overpower them, and you're like, ooh, yay, I can speak Spanish, look at all the countries I can absolutely overthrow because I'm bilingual, fluent queen. Like, oh my god, I can't.
And I just, I think for the demographic we've just recently discovered of people who are still writing their college admissions, of those who are, I'm just going to use the term now, BIPOC, how many of them have bought into this idea now that, like, it doesn't matter if I work for an unsavory company or organization, it doesn't matter if I feel guilty about what it is I'm doing, or that there could be some serious moral questions about what I do for a living. I'm doing a good thing by being a person of color at the table. Like, literally the whole idea of representation. Let's get into representation, because that seems to be the next other avenue that people seem to sink into when it comes to instead of getting justice, or instead of doing things with power constructively, the next big thing is representation. So yes. Why is it that people are just sinking themselves into this idea? Well, hey, I'm a person of color at the table. That's all we really needed to get. And maybe I can change things from there. Do people genuinely believe that? Or is that a cynicism? What do you think?
I think it really depends on what the situation is. And I think a lot of people... I will say a lot of people just want to be at the table because they also want a chance to do the bad things. They are also bad people with bad morals and everything. And they look up to these bad people with bad morals and they want to be a part of them. And they really hate that they're one of those people of color who can't do the bad thing as well. But I do think there's so many people who think that they can do better just being there. And I have to say that I feel sorry for those people more than the actual bad people, because you're getting fucking scammed. Your whole life and like everything is a scam. I knew a friend who understood that the police were bad, that the police did bad things, and that there was a lot of people who weren't good police. And their sense of trying to, like, how they try to make sense of that and everything was they decided to become a police officer so they can be the good and everything. And, like, they first initially said that they wanted to work for, like, the Ferndale Police Department because at least they, like, are around the gays and, like, they're having fun. Like, you know, you're not really doing anything. You're wearing pride flags and being in parades and shit like that. And then they were like, well, I want to work for Detroit. And it's like, so you're going to just jump into one of the worst, like, fucking police systems in America and just reform it? Yeah, I feel like that'll be easy.
Well, especially when we know for a fact that even within police structures, internal affairs is often hostile to cops who are whistleblowers.
They're usually the people who are like a part of it. They usually get some kind of cut out of it, or they're a part of the bad people who are keeping the bad people in. But don't worry, the person I talked about decided to just become a university police officer so they can really stop crime.
So basically they just arrest people for having a gram on them. Perfect.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
They give out DUIs and not DUIs, whatever, MIPs. It's been a long time since I've been underage. The MIPs. And they harass black kids and they and do that cool cop thing where they like lean against the car hood and look menacing, and you look at them and you're like, you could literally kill me in 3 seconds and nothing will happen. Absolutely nothing would happen. Nothing. Your life would probably just be slightly inconvenienced from my death.
I just university cops have to be we'll drop that.
Well,
that's the thing, is like, I think representation is this thing that liberals point to, because I think the culture war itself is politics now. Some people say that politics is a spectacle, and I think that's correct. But I think at this point, at least the way I look at it, is that the culture war is the only avenue through which it's expressed. And liberals have given up on using power towards any constructive end. So what it seems to be is, let's just put more people on TV and in movies. But that seems to be a really recent wave of it. Because being in the pandemic, we've just seen how many shows in the 90s did representation better.
Yes. I think... Well, one thing I would like to say about representation, well, another thing, because I've said a lot of things, is that the new thing, I think, that has really been post-2015, I will say, maybe even 14, is they want representation. We'll give them representation. So we have to search and find these people who have the exact same ideas as us, are in the same class as us, have gone to the same school as us, but they have that they're black, or they're maybe a model minority or anything else, and we're going to put them at the table, and that's your representation. But we don't really mean just I want a black person at the table. I mean, I would like someone who at least grew up poor and like fought their way up the system and everything. Like, we want at least those people to be having a seat, not the Harvard educated dude who went to the same fucking school as Mike Bloomberg for his entire life. And now he's like CEO of insert Fortune 500 company here. Like, that's not the representation that is needed, but that's the representation we're getting.
Well, and that's what it feels like next. It's like, okay, so now we've graduated from the college admissions essay. We got into the liberal has now gotten into the Grand College of Life. Now the next assignment is find a figure for whom you can write an essay about this person inspires me. And I feel seen by this person's story.
Yes, this... I love this person lived experiences because they also went to a private school and parents lost one of their jobs in 2008, but we were completely fine still because they already paid off their house and everything. And we've dealt with the minimum amount of adversity, but we are still thriving. Nevertheless, we persist, like all this other bullshit. And it's just like, I actually would rather us either destroy this shit or actually try to reform it. And since you guys don't want to reform, let's destroy. I guess that's our only option.
Well, yeah. And I guess what it is that just as the ritual of consumption is not destroyed, entertainment still gets to exist. The entertainment industry still gets to exist. Mm-hmm. They just have a product they can sell to people of color now.
Well, they always, like, I think that's the thing is a lot of, there is this type of like black consumerism that also stretches out to a lot of other people of color, they realize, because a lot of people of color either feel very connected to the black experience or want to consume the black experience. Either or, no matter which one those are, if you find and you can really consumerize to the black person, then you know that you have a stream of steady income, because black people are very loyal to companies they feel like are good to them. So if you become a company or a entity that is quote unquote good for black people because they feel like you are a better place to consume, then you're good. You're golden. You live in the liberal dream. You get to profit it off of everything without actually making the structural change. And no one's going to call you out because you have done the literal bare minimum of being like, black people don't suck. That's it. Nothing else. Just black people don't suck.
So, not to bring him up again, but let's talk about two presidents ago, former President Barack Obama. In some respects, I'm wondering if I should include a sound effect of like the Dracula, like
Barack Obama.
In some respects, he is the peak goal of that representation as Praxis project. You know what I mean?
He's our liberal king. He is everything. I am so surprised that the liberals did him so dirty, because he is absolutely everything they want to be. He does nothing. He's just there. Didn't shake up anything. Didn't make any actual waves. And then when people come and try to physically harm or like all of this other stuff, he just sits there and takes it. Like, that is the liberal dream. And I truly can't imagine them hating him as much as like we would hate him for not doing anything.
Yeah, and there was something very defeatist about his attitude in office, in that he really, in his writing, that book that everyone was mad about, like during the pandemic, he basically said, I have no power. I'm just here to be a figurehead. He really believes that about the president. He really believes that about himself, and that his only job was to be a smiling face. But because he was a black person, he had already moved the needle, and that was all he could do. And that's all he needed to do.
It's like a true type of like Uncle Tom's Cabin of like,
ooh, we gonna get canceled.
It's the modern day minstrel show, but in politics, like
for liberals. Minstrel shows for liberals.
Yeah, minstrel shows
for liberals.
Like, you get to sit there and you get to laugh at all of the black people. You get to pretend like you like black people. You get to listen to Beyonce and Lizzo and like be a girl boss and have WAP and all this other shit and not actually do absolutely anything. It's absolutely being silent on like Palestine, and but being so loud about like Muslims in China and like literally just screaming about stupid shit while absolutely doing nothing, having jobs that like mortgage brokers and just being like, I am a good person. Well, because I think I believe in the good things.
And this is where, like, Jordan Peele's Get Out is still a resonant piece of work, because in this kind of consumption-based representation as praxis, Vision, the racialized relationships between Black and white people, and conversely everyone else in America, still persist, because you're not doing anything to either right the wrongs or change the relationship. Mm-hmm. So in effect, we've gone from the harsher kinds of relationships of like actual slavery, then sharecropping, and then segregation, to, you know, conservatives just being on the losing end of the culture war. We don't need to get into how they view Black people. Or with liberals, it is still the same kind of objectification of Black people, but in this kind of, in the sense of like, it's done as appreciation, but it's like, look at this Black man. Look how well-spoken it is. Look at these Black women. Look how attractive they are. How much they entertain us.
Mm-hmm.
The appreciation is used to launder the consumptive relationship.
Yeah. Where it's just Black people exist and white people want to take something from them. Or use them for something. And that goes back to class, but people don't want to talk about that because there are LeBron James who are rich as all get, like, just extremely wealthy, but is still going through racism, but you want to pretend like he isn't.
So, with that deep dive on how liberals act, let's probably get into the tail end of this. Which had me thinking, right? Liberals aren't the only ones who talk about identity and narratives of identity. I've found that right-wingers, particularly right-wing nationalists, use identity in similar ways, but to explicitly do harm.
Mm-hmm.
To especially minority communities in areas they govern. And of course, I'm speaking to the really unfortunate things that are going on in East Jerusalem right now. I can't say that I'm an expert on what's going on. I can only say that I really stand with the Palestinian people right now, and that unilaterally, I don't care how many rockets Hamas launches back. The aggression was started by Israel, and it is a result of a discriminatory policy. But because have no real ties to that issue, I'm going to try and speak about a similar one that I have a direct tie to,
mm-hmm.
which is Hindu nationalism in India. Because they function in the same way. And honestly, Modi and Netanyahu are buddy-buddy at this point. So there's a lot of symmetry in how the two carry out these behaviors. So namely, Hindu nationalists use similar language of oppression. When they talk about suffering at the hands of Muslim rulers in the past,
mm-hmm.
and explicitly, in fact, like when talking to a Western audience, we'll say, hey, we were oppressed, we were colonized. And they never really seem to speak to the followed occupation by European colonial powers and what happened in those times. What seems to be the case more so is that these are descendants of that period. They exist as a ethnic minority that's separate from the one that we want to maintain. And they have a conception of Hindu ethnicity that isn't really grounded in reality, in my opinion, because Hinduism is a decentralized religion that was practiced more in more places than just India. Mm-hmm. In Nepal, in Thailand, in Indonesia, people have practiced Hinduism, right? But this kind of conception of identity from a right-wing nationalist perspective ties identity to possession of land and to possession of resources such that it's willing to do harm to others in that same sense. And broadly speaking, I feel that that's what Israel's doing right now. But when you speak out about it, that's where the dice seem to fly, because then this kind of intersectional language is lobbied at you for being anti-Semitic, for being a bro, for being... you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah. I just don't... I just love this sense of, hi, I have been wronged before, so now it's my turn to be the oppressor. Like, that is basically what it is. It's the, I didn't get a chance to oppress, and I've been oppressed, so it's my chance to be the oppressor now. I need, and your sense of finding yourself and your self journey and everything, if that turns to someone else having a bad situation, including like killing people or just like, you know, inconveniencing people, like, then I don't think you should be doing it. Like, I think you're probably a little wrong. But especially if they're not fighting the people who actually wronged them, even in the sense of like, one, what did the Palestinians do to you? And two, any conflict that you probably had is over or long gone, or it's just this sense of like, oh, we got to do this because it's always been done. Well, do something different. Fuck that. If it's a feud and you don't really need to be feuding anymore, it's not like, oh, like y'all stole our land and we need to make corn. It like you guys got more cornfields. Like, okay, why are you guys fighting now? Why is there a conflict? And it usually is a underlying reason. For the Palestinians and the Israelis, I can't say that the reason isn't more than the Israelis are wrong and horrible, and you can't use all of the bad things that your ancestors and your people went through to cause that same conflict with other people and say that you're doing it for a good reason.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately it, is that the reason why identity politics may be the best term for it, period, is because the idea of justice can be taken out of the equation wholeheartedly,
mm-hmm.
in favor of anything else. All you have to do is form a narrative of which you can justify the harm done to you. And then you can use that as your bargaining chip to do what you need to do next. And that's ultimately what I'm opposed to if anyone does it. I mm-hmm. think what needs to be done more so is that historical wrongs need to be corrected in a restorative sense. And then it needs to be said that we can't do it again. No one should be doing
right.
that. Not that this group has to do it now. And I think that's, to me, that's what I view as toxicity at an individual level. But even in these ideological conceptions, I view it as toxic as well, is that if you start to believe your own story of victimhood to the point of being willing to do harm to people, to the point of being disrespectful and even dehumanizing to other people, that's what constitutes toxicity to me, is mm-hmm. Well, you haven't been through what I've been through, so I'm gonna do it.
And it's like I said before, and like I will continue to say, I thought we didn't want other people to die, and like we didn't want to get like inflict like harm onto people who did not deserve it. Like I thought that was like one of the quote unquote golden rules. Like, I don't know. I guess that's just me. I guess my mama just raised me different. But
well, I think she did. But
built different.
What I think I will say is, I think this starts with Tumblr and ends with Tumblr for us, right? Is what sense I had when I read those when I was younger, all the screeds and all the posts on Tumblr, is mm-hmm. I had the sense that by addressing past wrongs, by addressing these systems, and by maybe talking more frankly about how power can be exercised to insidious ends, we may be on the verge of approaching a more equitable or egalitarian society, or maybe just something better than what we have right now. And that may have been too optimistic, because I think power can be employed to any end. It's just a tool, but it's the most powerful kind because it's power. And narratives are what we tell ourselves to justify its use. So it starts not only from within, but it has to be rooted in a conception of helping everyone. It has to be rooted in a conception of, I guess, preserving human life, or at least like preserving like some degree of human dignity, I guess, to me.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, the whole reason we dole out justice isn't just retribution. It's to make clear that the people who have been harmed can be tried, we can try to make them whole again, and that we don't do it again. And that seems to be sorely lacking in all of this. And I know it's very simplistic to reduce it down to that. And I'm not smart, guys. I've told you this. So that's the best you're going to get out of me.
I think you are smart.
Thank you. So to get our mind off of this kind of heavy subject, and maybe to really set my moral point, moral compass in the right direction, I'd like to share a clip of Bernie Sanders at a town hall that was hosted, ironically, by Fox News, where he was asked about back when everyone was mad at Ilhan Omar about comments she had made about the AIPAC lobby. And I think this is a good North Star for everyone who's been kind of made dull by all of the just horrible things we're seeing on Twitter, if you're following this, or just all the news coming out of East Jerusalem right now. I think this is the point that remains critical. So I'm going to share that.
Sure. My question is that even some fellow Democrats had some problems, have accused of her of using language kind of associated with anti-Semitism. Can you understand why some Jewish Americans would have a problem with some of that?
Yeah, I can understand. I think that is not quite right. And I think that Ilana's got to do maybe a better job in speaking to the Jewish community. But if your question to me is, do I think she is anti-Semitic? No, I don't.
No, it's not her. I'm saying the threat in
I can understand.
Democratic
but here is the point also. I'm Jewish. I lost my father's family, was devastated by Hitler. So this is an issue of some sensitivity to me. So I will do everything in my power, and I hope that every member of Congress will fight not only anti-Semitism, but racism and anti-Muslim activity, so that we create a non-discriminatory society. But it is not anti-Semitic to be critical of a right-wing government in Israel. That is not anti-Semitic, okay?
Yes! Go, King! No one should be killing people. Yes! Like, why is that so, like... Oh, why is that so, like, crazy?
And I think that's it at the end of the day, is we don't need to sink this deep into... academic theory. We don't need to sink that deep into being the most well-spoken. What it really takes is just a basic understanding of right and wrong, and just doing our best to ensure that, like, these things don't keep happening to all people. You get what I'm saying? It just takes consistency.
Yeah. Either we can say that this is bad and we shouldn't do it, or we let people do it and then we reprimand them after. But we kind of need to do either or.
Right. And I know that education matters in this, and that, like, we have to tell people, like, yes, there are historical wrongs. Yes, there are things that have been glossed over. And yes, a lot of people have misconceptions that need to be, like, challenged and, like, taught to them again. But we're not going to do it by sinking back into the academy. We have to do it with, like, I think a shared humanity. So that's what I got. I guess I'm going to go into closing plugs. So, for the Chapo heads out there, as of the time of this recording, I have no idea when this is going to be released. I'm going to do my best to get it up on the same day. Felix Biederman from Chapo is doing a stream of the FromSoft games on the Chapo Twitch. I'll put the link in the description. Hopefully, I don't know how long he's doing this for, but it's to raise money for a bunch of orgs that are collecting donations for aid for Palestine right now. So I'll send the links, and also share the links to the places collecting donations so you can donate separately if needed. And as always, thanks again for tuning in to Greenhouse Gaslighting. I'll include the links to our social media and our email below. So, thanks for tuning in, guys. Bye.
Bye.